what the fucking facts are.
It's very off the cuff, isn't it, Sean?
Yeah, cool, it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Talking Pollocks, episode 8.
Yeah.
And it's a very special episode because we have our first guest. Someone's actually agreed to be on here with us.
Yay!
Sean, you're here as well.
I am here, as
Would
always.
Would you do the honours of introducing our special guest for this week, please?
Yes, so this week is a very special guest. He is a Twitch streamer. And his name is probably known to some of you, and it's Urban Venture. Hello, Urban.
Hello. How's it going, guys?
Welcome. Thank you, first of all, for joining us. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Urban. Tell the people who you are and where you come from. They used to do that on, like, Blind Date, didn't they? What's your name and where'd you come from?
Yeah, I'm Urban. I come from down south, but like the lads here, I'm living up north at the moment. But yeah, my background's sort of filmmaking, stuff like that, but more recently I've moved over to streaming and just seeing what Twitch and the internet's all about. It's fun.
You're very good at building rockets, we know that.
Oh yeah, so that's the kind of idea that the channel's based around spaceflight. I completely forgot, I'm just here like, hey. Spaceflight's the main focus.
Well, I've got you.
And then yeah, I just like, oh good, yeah.
Have you got like sort of like a NASA command center built up in your streaming office, Urban? Because from the stream, it looks like you've got everything there, like a full flight sim setup.
Yeah, that's been the big thing actually, trying to make everything kind of So I've been building this like whole desk and control room. It's somewhere between like sitting inside the space shuttle and being one of those people in the 60s with the waistcoat on in mission control, you know, keeping an eye on the boys on the moon. So yeah, it's been a project. It's grown with the stream, and at the moment it's just about contained into one room, but we'll see how that goes.
So this week's topic, which is why we've got you on, Urban, is kind of like a bit of a mix of online safety, misinformation, kind of that kind of thing.
Social media, sort of.
Yeah, the social media influence on what life is like for you as a streamer. You're obviously on social media platforms and everything like that, and his socials will, of course, be in the description, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to go and give him a little follow. We'll start, I think, with... you said you've recently made the transition to being a streamer and you came from filmmaking. How was your first foray into creating media online?
I think, to be honest, I was much more conscious of that first time putting on the camera. I think a lot of people are. And I've done like my actual, before I got into film, I was an actor, or at least, you know, at like school and college kind of followed that route.
Okay.
But it's definitely a different thing putting your genuine self in front of the camera. And with the way that like a lot of streaming platforms work, you're normally doing something you care a lot about. So it's kind of putting your heart and soul out there. But I don't think I had the worry that a lot of people do, that I'm going to be like, have people take the mickey out of me and kind of be aware of like, oh, I didn't know I looked like that from that angle, you know, 6 hours into a gaming session with your jaw like. But I think it's mostly that thing of like, you go in with this expectation that people might kind of be kind of cruel or like maybe a bit critical or whatever, and actually most people are the same. They're sat at the keyboard just wanting someone to hang out with. So I expected the worst and have seen the better side of it, sort of thing.
It's always nice to hear the good side of the internet, but I guess as with everything online, we only ever hear about the bad. You know, when you're watching the news on the telly, you know, whether it's BBC, Sky News,
and
NBC, or whatever, they're not going to do a whole day of there were some puppies born in a barn and they were frolicking. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah,
you're only ever going to hear the bad stuff. And when you're scrolling through, you know, doom scrolling through Twitter, you're only ever going to see the bad stuff.
But that's the same with all media. You know, the media is really, they're there to tell us what bad things are going on in the world. That is, realistically, that is the purpose of the media. You were touching on there, Urban, about sort of being yourself, being a genuine person, and but still sort of engaging with your audience, whoever's watching. When you moved into streaming, did your own sort of your own privacy concerns come into it? Because, you know, you are trying to be an authentic person, so you want to give yourself across in streaming, but you also want to protect yourself personally, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think to be honest, it was more the like technical side of it where I was thinking, I don't know how much information I'm actually giving out. Like, I feel like just through, you know, networking and stuff professionally, you kind of get used to like how much you share, how much you don't, just in terms of politeness. But I think it was that idea of like, yeah, am I like essentially just broadcasting where I live? But whether or not it kind of is a better thing or a worse thing, I actually started streaming from a house that my grandparents used to own, which was on sale. So I was like, it's on the market. If anyone, you know, turns up and raids it and does all these things, you know, like works out where you live, I was like, well, I won't be here for very long. This house is, you know, it should be sold already, sort of thing. But yeah, I think that was more like I wasn't necessarily worried that I would say too much or like people would kind of make me feel uncomfortable and I'd like, yeah, go down a weird route verbally. But I think I was just always concerned of like, what can the platform actually, you know, what can somebody get from you? But the funny thing is, I think it's the same with everything on the internet where you have the concern about the potential of it. But in truth, it's like, who's got the time and effort to want to do that thing? When you hear these stories of like people getting stalked and things like that, I think a lot of the time it's because they have a huge, huge following and then they're a target just because of their notoriety sort of thing. Whereas when you're just like starting out and you've got two people watching, I think the idea that one of those would really, you know, want to and be able to do anything, like it's a possibility, you need to be aware of it. But I think in reality, most people are just, you know, just absolutely fine, not going to care about that.
I think it goes back to, I think, what do we, let's think about this. What did we do before social media, right?
There was the print media, so you had your newspapers.
Yeah.
That's how you found out about stuff. You had your local notice boards.
Yeah, but, you know, the local, you know, the small communities, you know, you see the small community. I mean, there's so many small communities out there now on social media. For example, my brother was telling me yesterday about a whole subculture of rock climbing-based memes.
Yeah.
And before social media and before all that, you'd meet someone down the pub, you'd have a pint with them, you'd hear the local gossip, bitch about someone behind their back. I think the internet has made it easier for people to target people, right? It's a tool that's being used for good, don't get me wrong, but it's also being used mostly for bad.
Again, that's I completely agree. It's that is one of those things, though. Every human invention or concept has been used in both a positive and a negative way. Let's take the car, for example. The car is a fantastic tool in getting you from A to B, right? But people use cars to run people over.
They do.
On purpose and stuff like that. So again, it's an example of the car is a fantastic tool and most people will use it in a safe way that allows the entire population to enjoy it. But there's always going to be those few people who try and manipulate that tool. The concerning thing is the amount of people that are using the internet to commit crime. So
Sean's coming at you with facts.
I'm coming at you with some facts. So there was a 17% rise in online fraud between 2022 and 2023. There was 5.5 million cases of computer fraud or online fraud, resulting in £3.2 billion of financial losses for the everyday person.
That's not a small amount of money.
No, but that's, you know, 3.2 billion over 5.5 million cases. Probably, you still look at that and think that's still quite large sums of money that they're being able to take.
And whilst using misusing computers, you might say, a 2022 survey revealed that 33% of UK children aged between 11 and 17. So these are people, in my opinion, that probably shouldn't even have access to the internet yet. In, you know, not in the capacity that they do.
Everyone has access to the internet.
Have experienced some form of cyberbullying.
Again, it's one of them things. And Urban was pointing to the fact that he's had some really great experiences.
Which is great.
And we're saying about the few trying to spoil it for the many. Have there been any instances, Urban, where you've had someone come in and maybe not bully you, but potentially say things out of turn that could offend other people?
I think, to be honest, I would say like overall no. And even if I tried to think about like with everything else I've probably done in life, I can think of, like, so for example, when I was a filmmaker, I can think of those stories where you went to a job and it got very uncomfortable. You realized, like, maybe the people that had hired you hadn't told the people you were filming and stuff like that, and there was all sorts of issues. I would say actually in streaming, it's been the kind of what I was expecting, which is there's somebody comes in who thinks they're funny, their jokes don't really land very well, and the worst thing you could do is react as if, you know, they've offended you or annoyed someone. The best thing is just kind of making them realize that they're a bit stupid. But I do think one of the things I said early on when I started streaming was I wasn't going to make any rules, like no sexism, no racism, nothing like that, because in my mind that should be obvious enough. Like, the platform is against it anyway. There's nowhere on Twitch that you can be openly racist and sexist without some sort of repercussion. But obviously that line gets very blurred in the middle.
Of course.
But I was always like, it should just be obvious. You know, there shouldn't be a need when talking about space games to be going down that route.
This
Whereas,
exactly
for example, I couldn't say the same about politics. You know, I could say, oh, like, I don't want the stream to be political, but realistically, politics and space are so closely linked, it's going to go there at some point. So again, I just was like, well, I'm not going to ban politics, I'm not going to say don't do it. But when it's clearly, you know, somebody just spouting off their opinion and it doesn't go anywhere and they're constantly annoying people, that's very different. But yeah. I still think the best thing has always been, like, just literally pretending it doesn't come up. Everyone pretends it didn't happen, no one reads it, and that person just feels a bit of a fool. Those people don't actually have very strong opinions, I'm convinced. They literally just turn up in the chat just to get a reaction, and when they don't
get it,
they just move on.
Yeah. It's like they like watching the world burn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think, like, I was a teenager once. I remember how much power you felt like you had, even if it was just walking along the street and feeling like people were aware of you because you looked like you didn't belong and you were, you know, deliberately trying to be difficult or something like that. And the minute you started to realize that actually no one cares, it got really difficult. You had to look inside and do all the work that, you know, makes you improve yourself as a person and stuff like that. Whereas, yeah, if you get a reaction and somebody's like, look, I'm gonna have this guy banned and we're all gonna do this thing, whatever, it's just feeding into it. It's anything to be noticed, and not being noticed is the harshest punishment to someone who's doing that, I think.
Yeah, that's the only reason that they do these things and say these things and join these things is to get attention.
Yeah, definitely.
Now,
yeah.
There are, believe it or not, easier and nicer ways of doing so, just by being a human, right?
Just be a nice person.
Just be a nice
person. That seems to work.
Like we said on the last podcast, no matter how much you dislike Trump, you don't need to shoot him, okay?
No, exactly.
You just didn't need to do that, right? We know he's an asshole. We know that. But if America want him as their president again, that is their right, okay?
Yeah.
We'll just deal with it for 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. But going back to... So you're talking a lot there about Twitch, Urban, and mm-hmm. about how Twitch do quite a lot in terms of trying to tackle sexism, racism, you know, the sort of misogynistic behaviour, discriminatory behaviour that people try and perpetrate, so repercussions on Twitch. Mm. In terms of platforms as a whole, so as a streamer, I can imagine you use other social media platforms as well to try and, you know, give across information more than anything, or trying to boost your reach a little bit. You know, we all do it. Do you feel that all platforms take it as seriously as Twitch do? Because I do agree that Twitch is very hot on it.
Mm.
But do you feel that all platforms, sort of, let's not naming any X for one, do you feel that they all take it seriously?
We're so unbiased.
I think everyone has a different ethos on it. I think Twitch seems to be very aware of how much, because of the live aspect and stuff like that, you could see, and I think probably because of the history, I mean, there's news stories recently about how much a Twitch streamer is almost like a cult leader. They've, you know, if they decide to take their chat a certain way and bombard people with certain ideas, whereas I feel like something like TikTok is much more, and probably X as well, is that idea that it's like creating the perfect like echo chamber, right? So there's this theory at the moment about the idea that, like, if you have any sort of disposition to see the world a certain way, and the way that the TikTok algorithm works, you're just going to see more and more of that. And when you go to the comment comments, people are saying that the comments are different depending on how you last interacted with videos. So if you criticize the man in a gender reveal or something like that, the next video you see will have people in the comments saying the same sorts of things. I thought he was, you know, being unempathetic, all the sort of traits and tropes of being a man. Whereas if your partner maybe doesn't have those videos and goes and sees it, they're going to get different comments. So I feel like Twitch is maybe some of the things that have happened are really quite severe and much more obvious. So there's been this huge push to kind of resist it. And there's a lot of sub communities that feel much more represented on Twitch than they do elsewhere. But I feel like the scary thing is the other platforms maybe have, they do have more of it. And also it's not as obvious. You can't just turn into, you know, like even some of the live streams I've seen where you're just like, this person is very out and out a certain way that I just can't get on with. They're way too aggressive. They're all about, you know, combat and fighting, and I just don't like it, you know. But it's obvious, whereas I feel like videos I'm watching,
don't they?
Exactly. But I feel like some videos I'm watching on YouTube or something like that, or TikTok, it's much more subtle, and I think that's one of the reasons it maybe goes under the radar.
I think at the moment, at least for me, when I'm scrolling through Twitch and, you know, the Kick and everything else like that, everybody seems to have like a controversial niche. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like everybody has to have a controversial viewpoint, don't they?
It certainly seems that they're trying. I think this all started with Flat Earth,
right? Somebody came out and said, I think the Earth is flat. That was the original controversial thought on the internet, because that blew up something fucking chronic, didn't it?
But the problem is now, it's bordering from controversial into
downright
discriminatory.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. No, I see where you're going with that.
It is a very fine line, don't get me wrong. It's the same as this whole free speech argument versus what you say on Facebook and whether you can be prosecuted under current laws for it, which as we have seen in the media over the last couple of weeks.
That's a good question for you, Urban, actually. You will have seen in the news recently, living in the UK, with us, that obviously these riots that happened, a lot of people were stirring up hate online, and a few people have been convicted and put in prison for something that they said online, one of which being somebody go and smash up this hotel.
Yeah, so Jordan Plainer, I believe his name was, 30-year-old man, said that he actually had a broken ankle at the time, which is quite funny, and he was telling people to go and burn down a hotel full of asylum seekers.
Brilliant.
And he posted this on Facebook. And he couldn't attend, obviously, because of his broken ankle. People actually attended this hotel and attacked it and tried to burn it down. And he's then been sentenced to 30 months in prison, which is 2 years,
so,
6 months.
What's your view on that, Urban?
I feel like I remember being like, what would that have been like? When I was maybe 12 years old and was getting to that point where I could, you know, go on the computer at home, I remember how much things said on social media was seen as outrageous, but in a throwaway manner, like the sort of things, you know, you overhear somebody having a conversation at the pub and you just think, well, they're just, you know, they're just
drunk,
they're not actually meaning that. But it definitely has changed in terms of it's as if everybody who understood it was somewhat sarcastic or maybe exaggerated and was just venting an idea. And I don't say, like, saying attacking a building is different. There's never going to be an idea where that isn't easy to construe as being real. But certainly, you know, even making jokes about recent politics things and events, you can kind of have like a hot take that you can throw away and just see it for the humor and then move on. But I definitely feel like it's exposed this kind of wave of people that do just read it and think, well, yeah, that's a great idea. Like I genuinely feel that way, and you're telling me that this is the reason why something's happening, or this is the way I fix it. Why don't I just go and act on it? You know, it fills people full of a certain confidence that they maybe would have felt that they didn't have before, and not for the best reasons. But I definitely think I would have said
that keeps popping into my head is Liz Truss with the lettuce, right? She will never be able to live that down now. She was in the news the other day. She was doing an event in Eccles in Suffolk. It was yesterday in Eccles in Suffolk, and she was doing something about her book that she's released.
Yeah.
And a big banner came down behind her that said,
"You crashed the economy." It was a picture of a lettuce.
I crashed the economy, and it was a picture of the Daily Star lettuce from Liz Truss.
Yeah.
Now, because the Daily Star did that and live streamed it, Liz Truss will now only ever be known as a lettuce.
But the problem
she's not going to be known as the Prime Minister. She's not going to be known as the Prime Minister that, you know, saw us through Queen Elizabeth's death and saw that transition. And
the question
she will only ever
I
be known have... as an iceberg lettuce.
The question that I have with that, though, is where does it then border on bullying?
So this is what I was going to say. Yeah. Does everyone that, because I've done it online, I said that, you know, there was a recent petition going around that I shared as a joke and said, hey, look, we can make Keir Starmer last less time than the letters did. You know, I've said it. Is yeah. that, and would that be considered bullying? Even though I didn't directly say it to Liz Truss, I have put it on that open public forum.
Where she could openly see it.
Exactly. It's like taking out free ads in the 70s that says, you know, my wife is a dick or something.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? The Liz Truss one really got me because that was definitely where I started to... Because I've always, you know, like with everything that happened and how dire things felt like during that period, you kind of, you needed the comedy, you needed the jokes about letters and stuff to get through. Whereas the funniest thing to me about that is it's like, oh, I can't believe people are still bothering her with it. You know, and that's where it stops seeming as funny, because you're like, wow, they can't actually just move on now. You know, like, fair enough, you put yourself on a platform, you decided to, you know, be in charge of the country or run to be in charge of the country. But yeah, it is a case of like, yeah, you might just now get that forever. Mm. And actually that isn't, you know, that isn't all fair and game when you're in the public eye. But to be fair, you know, that is what you get, I guess, when you also try and sell books and keep the dream alive that, you know, you're going to be relevant in that way. So I still think, though, it's if she handled it better, maybe there would be an element of people kind of being able to see past it.
I mean,
but because it gets the reaction, because you storm off stage, you breathe more energy into it.
Yeah, you could go deeper into this. You could go that actually it was the people that put Liz Truss in power.
Well,
it was the members of the Conservative Party that voted her into that position. And it was only because she failed, Rishi Sunak got in, who... the party overwhelmed, you know, the party membership overwhelmingly voted against.
Yeah.
But that is democracy at the end of the day. And, you know, let's all be honest, being the Prime Minister of this country is never going to be an easy job. No matter what is going on at the time, there is always going to be a crisis of some kind that you're having to deal with.
The biggest
while
one
also
for me,
juggling the 10 million plates that
the
is our
one for
government.
Me was Brexit, right? Theresa May.
Oh, I hate
she
it.
Had to convince effectively 58 million people that she was doing the right thing and that her way was the right thing to do. She couldn't convince 639 or however many were in the House at that point, let alone the half of, you know, the half of them that voted for Brexit
and
the other half that didn't.
Yeah, but, you know, that is our voting system.
You know, Labour have harped on about having a mandate. We know, we talked about this last week.
Fuck Labour's mandate is all I'm going to say. And so far, all they've done is go back on everything they've said.
Well, I must admit,
but
West Street Inc has sorted out the doctor's strikes, we think.
But they're already...
Keir Starmer did very well at the NATO summit,
they
I have
are getting
say.
Ready to ballot again in the NHS, let's be honest.
Keir Starmer has been arguing a lot with Elon Musk, going back to the online safety thing. Have you seen this, Urban?
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, because that's been the weirdest thing for me in the last couple of weeks, is how much Elon's gone from somebody who maybe has his own opinions and is, you know, clearly driven by industry to, yeah, I'm just going to jump on the bandwagon. I'm just going to be a Trump lover. Like, it's wild. Absolutely wild.
But going back to the whole Elon thing, so it's also going back to the sort of the prosecutions about people who have posted certain things online. If you bring the two things together, so Elon Musk it's been proven that he shared things on Twitter about the British riots that were proven incorrect or false.
Yes.
Nigel Farage also shared information on Twitter that was proven to be incorrect or misleading.
Right.
So we're prosecuting people for inciting the violence, specifically for posting, go and burn down this hotel and this hotel almost being burnt down.
Yeah.
In a way, the people that are sharing this misinformation is also fueling the anger and the speculation, which is then driving into these riots more. Should they also be looked at in terms of prosecution?
And
so, and as a caveat to that, with the online safety bill that was recently introduced, I think it came into force in April this year. That puts an obligation on on social media platforms. So Elon Musk, as an owner of a platform, should be taking this seriously.
Yeah.
Do we feel that the law is strong enough and that these people should also face the law?
That's a tough question because it's first of all, it's Elon's platform.
It is his platform, yes, but he's still spreading misinformation.
Urban?
I was going to say, it's my pub. I can talk all the shit I want in it. It's like your pub has millions and millions of people drinking in there. And you're like, yeah. Well, you can.
And let's look at this another way. Elon Musk is somewhat... People look up to Elon Musk. They see him online as a bit of a pariah, I think. Let's just put this into perspective. 90% of UK children aged between 13 and 17 are active on social media. 90%. Yeah. They look up to these celebrities. So when these celebrities endorse these, you know, these face and hand creams that burn your face and riot in and stuff like that, naturally, we're teaching them it at such a young age. They've got access to this stuff at such a young age that naturally they're going to think that that's the right thing to do when their heroes are saying it.
Okay, so let's go back. Okay, let's imagine this. Close your eyes. Forget everything. Clear your mind.
Right,
the year is 2000.
Jesus Christ, okay.
You have a Nokia 3310 in your pocket.
I do, it was grey with white buttons. I got it for Christmas, I was ecstatic.
You don't know what an iPad is?
I assume it's...
The internet does not exist in your household.
Dial-up?
Not in the year 2000.
I'm pretty sure I had access to AOL in 2000.
Not in the year 2000.
No?
I doubt it.
Anyway, sorry.
1996 was when it first started to become a consumer product, but that was, you know, very beginning few houses. Okay. You would have got your media from a newspaper or from the TV, right?
Yeah.
So when a newspaper prints on the front page incorrect information, misinformation, so... For example, in this recent example with the Elon Musk, Nigel Farage, saying the Southport attacker was a illegal immigrant who came over on a boat in October 2023. Yeah. If that was printed on the front of the Sun newspaper would be held accountable for that. That would be illegal.
Hmm.
They would be fined heavily. They would have to issue a retraction,
yeah,
so on and so forth. So why, just because it's online... Is it okay?
I'm gonna play a kind of devil's advocate here, but in terms of what retweeting and reposting is that you printing your own secondary newspaper and, like, you know, sending it around? Or is that more that you turned up and gave someone else's paper? Because that's where the liability and the whole, like, is it criminal comes in, isn't it?
I always thought the concept of reposting was like, oh, I'm...
Yeah, exactly.
Have you seen this? Like, you know, you're showing something on your phone.
Yeah.
I thought that was the concept of reposting. I wouldn't have thought that if I was to repost something, it would be a case of me copying it and giving someone a copy.
So if Keir Starmer retweeted something on X, would you believe it?
If Keir Starmer retweeted something on X,
yeah,
I mean, as the prime minister of our country,
bearing in mind that,
but
bearing in mind that Nigel Farage is a member of Parliament, Elon Musk is one of the most influential men in the world,
yeah, and one of the richest,
Why are they any different to? Why is it any different from what they post to what Keir Starmer posts, for example? Bearing in mind that, as I said, Nigel Farage is a member of Parliament. He is in, you know, our parliamentary system, so he should in turn be held accountable in the same way that the Prime Minister is.
I hate it when you do this, Sean. Coming at me with the hard questions.
I still feel like I don't trust a repost much more than the act of somebody physically holding up their phone and saying, isn't this funny? Like, it's like, you know, you react to it, but you don't take it into any sort of... And I'm not saying that's, you know, actually what happens. I think that's probably the scary fact is how many people do see something reposted by even a fake account that is just not that person. But any sort of credibility, you know, and someone like Elon being one of the most credibles, because you're saying, well, he owns the platform, he must know the best. But yeah, it is funny, though, that X's big thing when Elon took over was that they were going to tackle this sort of thing and make sure that posts, you know, they can say this post may not be credible, these are the sources,
community
blah,
notes.
Blah, blah.
Me and Criff are part of the community notes.
We
add notes to X posts.
Oh, cool. Yeah, because I felt like that is one of those ideas that on paper sounds great until somebody who like has all that power can just bypass it or
Wikipedia,
you know, it becomes so
it?
Commonplace that no one reads it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
according
you just kind of go, well, it's trustworthy or not.
According to Wikipedia at one point, which is my favourite fact, according to Wikipedia, the Queen married Eminem. That was a genuine thing that was on Wikipedia once. And it just goes to show, people can just write whatever they want on the internet, but some people will
believe
that. And just going back to your question about Keir Starmer, Sean, yes, I would believe something he said if he posted it online. Because Keir Starmer holds himself, I would hope, to the values and the views of the British people. He's been elected
but
into
so
that position.
So should an elected member of our parliament.
And so should Nigel Farage. But that doesn't mean that he isn't entitled to his own opinion.
No,
and sometimes we forget that because we think, oh, MPs, they're there for us. We pay their salaries. They are still people.
No,
and we
I
have spoken
agree,
about this by,
but...
you know, people throwing milkshakes and cement at Nigel Farage just because we think he's a bit of a dick doesn't mean you need to throw stuff at him.
No.
It goes back to that. He is still entitled to his own opinion. And we know Farage has very strong opinions about everything.
Okay, we're going back to the year 2000. We've gone back 24 years again.
Not much has changed, so... but they live underwater.
Yeah.
If
your local MP, so... Nigel Farage is someone's local MP, so
Clacton.
We'll just imagine that your local MP is stood in the town centre and there's a rally going on and you've gone down to hear what they've got to say.
Okay.
And they start telling you that the person who stabbed the three little girls in Southport was an illegal immigrant who came over on a boat in October last year.
You're going to believe them, aren't you?
You're going to believe them because they are an influential person within the community who should... who you should be able to believe what they say.
Do you think that's more ignorance on the people's part, whereas they just believe anything that they say, or...
I believe...
That, you know, they just don't want to do the research, or do you think it's more of like a... this man is powerful, we should... It's our right, you know, we have to believe him, it's what we have to do.
It's more of
it's our moral duty.
It's a case of we should be able to believe in our politicians. We've elected them into that position, and they are there to serve our best interests in running our country. It's not their country, it's our country, and they should have our best interests at heart when
should,
they're speaking
being the operative word there.
And representing us. You know, whether he's representing himself as an MP at the time or not, he is an MP. You know, people get sacked for less when they're police officers, but acting for behaviour unbecoming of an officer, for example.
So you're saying there should be behaviour unbecoming of a...
There's codes of conduct that says that they're not allowed to spread misinformation.
Urban?
I feel like maybe Criff like settled on something there for a second that really resonated, which is you said because it's Keir Starmer, I would probably believe it, and I think that's maybe what it comes down to, isn't it? It's the credibility thing. It's if this person does it a lot, you start to build up a reputation. The scary thing is how much we're likely to go with the opinion that we already want to be true, and I think that's where someone like Farage does really well, is because, you know, the people hearing that and taking it on board kind of want to be able to blame it on somebody that, you know, came into this country illegally and blah, 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 blah. You know, that like phantom person that exists beyond the corner of their vision where they can, you know, be blaming them. But I think it does, you know, someone like Elon 10 years ago had a lot more credibility because they were doing amazing things with their companies and stuff, and everything they were pushing for felt very positive and stuff like that. And pretty much since the missing boys in Thailand and the whole like fallout around that, their credibility meter kind of started dropping, and now it's a case of like some people can overlook certain things and see the, you know, success of the company to be greater than anything else. But I would say it's a case by case basis for me. I would trust certain politicians more than others, and some of the things that might fool someone else, because I know how easy it is to get verified on X, for example.
Yeah.
You know, that might trick somebody else to go, oh, well, they've got a badge next to their name. They're wearing a nice suit. You know, all those technologies have existed before. There was, you know, the ability to afford certain things to make yourself seem more credible. But at the end of the day, it has come down to, has what you've been saying actually been proven true? Or are you constantly in the middle of these kind of, you know, he said, she said, this is how it went sort of thing? But the scary thing is that's because...
Sorry, Gavin.
It's because you've been taught critical thinking at some point. Yeah. That's why you're able to do it. And the scary thing is, if you haven't, if you don't have as fortunate enough, you know, time in a background to understand these things, then you can fall for it easier. And that's the scary thing. But that's not to say that, you know, if you should trust anyone that hasn't been taught these things. It's just the more experience you get, the fact that I've lived my whole life with the internet, I'm probably better at spotting it than my parents and their parents who haven't had, you know, every opportunity to.
I mean,
definitely. And sorry, Chris.
No, you go.
Just on that, with it being a subjective thing, assessment, let's say, rather than an objective assessment. If we bring it back round to politics and how our government would be able to handle that. Normally, a law, for example, let's take, you know, the Homicide Act. That is objective. The facts are the facts. Murder is murder. Manslaughter is manslaughter. You know, it is what it is.
If you do this,
how can our government ensure that people are safe online if there is no objective way to do it?
Tough yeah, question, I think I know. It's even things like, you know, we used to trust stats and things more because it took a lot more time and effort and you had to have more of an establishment to actually gain the sort of data it would take to put these things together, whereas now there's literally programs which and things you can use to just like debunk stuff. You hear a stat, you read a stat on the internet, you go and check it, and it's like, well, it kind of, it's from a study done this time ago, and it very quickly falls apart. So yeah, I think it is, like you say, because it's quantitative, because it's qualitative. You just can't really say if it is or isn't, and therefore it gets to exist and damage the people it's going to damage and not affect the ones that are going to ignore it anyway, I guess.
I do think that something needs to be done about it, but the problem is, as with most things these days, how do you police it?
Yeah.
Well, apparently with the police, it seems to be working for them over the riots.
And considering that Labour were complaining that the court system was so backed up, they seem to have got through these prosecutions pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's for that deterrent effect, you know, anything can happen if you say we're going to open the courts 24 hours.
Which just goes to show that the government could do things if they put their mind to it.
Yeah, but you would require solicitors working 24 hours, and that's just not going to happen. You're not going to get that for a long period of time. A few days, it's happened, maybe.
Long periods
of time, not going
to
happen.
But it just goes to show, when the government needs to get something done, it can do it.
Oh, know? It can, definitely.
Exactly. So why are they still putting shit in rivers?
Well, you'd have to ask
Right?
Pem.
Come on. It's a simple fucking thing.
You'd have to
why
ask
are they still
Thames,
putting shit in rivers?
You'd have to ask Thames Water rather than the government.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't the whole point that it's not the government, because we're one of two countries in the entire world that isn't letting the government?
My gripe with it is that the government have put such lax controls in place and such lax regulatory requirements in place that they are just letting them do it. And they'll they will just keep doing it because they'll just pay the fine, because it's pocket change.
But that's the regulator's fault.
Who is run by?
Well, they're independent. It's the same as Ofcom.
Just in case you can't see, because this is a podcast, I'm pulling that...
Ofcom, for example, that's one of the UK's biggest regulators. They've got the most teeth of all
the
regulators
in
the UK.
And we both agree that...
And I hate Ofcom.
This one's going to both agree that Ofcom is shit, is what I was going to say.
Ofcom, realistically, needs to be split up into two divisions. You've got connectivity and you've got broadcast services. And that's what it needs to be split up into.
Yeah.
At the moment, it's too much of a beast to tackle. Ofcom doesn't know what's going... right hand doesn't know what its left hand is doing.
No, exactly. And they're very quick to act when somebody gets their tit out on BBC before 9 o'clock. But, you know, Katie Price comes on and says a controversial thought. Loads of people complain about it. Nothing happens. So they're not really that effective, are they?
Yeah, that's more bankruptcy than anything.
But also, when you complain about your broadband, don't you also have to go to Ofcom as the ombudsman?
No.
Who's that?
Ofcom will not hear a complaint about broadband. You have to go to the ombudsman.
Yeah.
Which is the telecommunications.
But Ofcom set the rules for that, right?
Yeah, it's all Ofcom regulated. They are the regulator.
Not only are they deciding what we can see on the telly, they're also the complaints. The people that set the rules for when you complain about your broadband and your phone line not working. What? That makes no sense.
That's the problem with Ofcom. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
In the immortal words of British Formula One driver Lando Norris, it's broken!
It's broken.
It's broken.
It is. Ugh. A lot like most of the systems in this country, unfortunately. And unfortunately, I can't see them getting better anytime soon.
So I just wanted to, before we round this up, because we've gone way over half an hour.
That's all right.
Just a couple of things, right? I thought I would go on to the relevant social media sites and just run through like their online safety stuff. Right. What each of them have got.
Okay.
Right. So we'll start with Facebook. Meta.
Right. Okay.
So here are a few things you can do to stay safe on Facebook.
Oh God.
Number one,
learn how
to use Facebook's privacy shortcuts and settings comfortably to share and connect with others. So already this feels like a sales pitch to use Facebook, doesn't it? In the first sentence,
everything
right?
that they type is a sales pitch to use Facebook, of course it is.
Learn how to recognise sensitive content and behaviour and how to report it. Remember these simple rules about staying safe online. Never share your password, think before you post. Adjust your privacy settings and review them often. Only accept friend requests from people you know personally. And report things that look suspicious. Now I report things on Facebook all the time, right? All the time. Nothing ever gets done. The posts never get removed.
Even to the point
where my old Facebook account was hacked, they asked me to prove who I was, so I sent them a copy of my passport, and Facebook said, that's not you, and the account got given to the hacker.
I would argue that if you report something on Facebook, something does get done, so
they certainly do. They press a button that just says decline.
No, see, I regularly report political posts that are incorrect on Facebook, and obviously every time you get told what's happened, and every time I've had a response recently, since the election anyway, I've had a positive response saying we've removed the post.
What's your experience, Urban?
To be honest, I was going to kind of question. So, do you feel like Facebook writes that because they genuinely want their users to be more informed and use the platform sensibly, or is it a let's cover our ass because somebody's going to come and?
That's all it is.
Yeah, because
it's a regulatory requirement for them to have it.
Yeah.
But the scary thing is, they'll get better interaction out of somebody misusing the platform, getting irate about something they read. Having a argument over 26 messages, and they can put some ads between those messages and stuff like that. It comes down to that incentive thing. Like the company doesn't actually want it to be regulated, other than if it's so bad that people drop off the platform. So it's just that classic corporate thing. I'm going to do the bare minimal to cover all eventualities without really thinking about why people want to do it. And that's where X has gone to as well. People love getting angry on there. Mm-hmm. If you're really in a mood and you want to get it out, X is the place to go. But yeah, it's because it's everything about the way these things are set up feeds off of discourse and getting irate and falling out with somebody for no reason.
So, just coming back to this list about staying safe on Facebook, that's it. That's all they've written. They've got links to Bullying Prevention Hub, Child Exploitation Online Protection Centre, ChildNet International, CommonSense.org. ConnectSafely.org, etc. They've got all of these links, but realistically there's what? 30, 40 words
but
about staying safe
those
on Facebook? X, I haven't been able to find the page yet.
Yes, because you won't be able to find the page. So, as Urban said, it goes back to all of those links on Facebook's support hub, whatever it is, they are all there because they're regulatory requirements. If people are misusing the platform, then there is more engagement, their figures look better, there's more ads being viewed because more people are arguing on the platform.
I found X's.
Oh, you did?
I found it. So, they've got here privacy, spam and fake accounts, sensitive content and abuse. They've actually got quite a lot of information on here, X, to be fair.
That's because they don't have a moderation team, so they have to give it somewhere.
So let's have a look. One of the things that we've noticed with being on Etsy for a little while is a lot of impersonation and bot accounts.
Many bot accounts.
So as of the 17th, as of October 17th, 2023, we've started testing Not a Bot, a new subscription method for new users in two countries. This new test was developed to bolster our already significant efforts to reduce spam, manipulation of our platform, and bot activity. This will evaluate a potentially powerful measure to help us combat bots and spammers on X, while balancing platform accessibility with a small fee amount. Within this test, existing users are not affected. So, X are aware that bots are an issue. They know that these accounts exist. What is stopping them from just shutting them down, and why don't they do it?
So, there is an element there of they need to be sure that it is a bot account.
Why? Thirdly, why are they making people pay for it now? To get away from bots and to have less bots? They're actively if you want less bots on Twitter, give us some money every month we'll make sure that you see less of them.
The thing is...
They're making money
Now. How do you get around bots? You put a paywall in place. That is a genuine way around it.
They're acknowledging that the bot accounts are still there, and they're saying to normal users, pay us $6 a month, we'll make sure you don't see any of the bot accounts, rather than just removing the bot accounts. That's money grabbing at its finest.
Because, as I said, going back to what I said, there is that element for them of they need to be sure that it is a bot account, for example. So a funny example is Brooklyn99 Captain Raymond Holt. He created a Twitter account and his tweets that he was a bot. His account was shut down. Especially in this day and age with AI, these bots are very convincing. They can be. A lot of the Twitter accounts, don't get me wrong, they are obviously bots. Like, there was someone who followed us the other day called Dave, and it was a half-naked lady in the picture.
I don't think
her name was
Dave.
Obviously not Dave.
It could be in today's world, but I'm going to be honest. I think it's more like a Candice.
Yeah, yeah. Saffron.
Saffron. Go on.
In this day and age, bots and human activity online is getting much harder to differentiate. And that is me playing devil's advocate.
Urban?
Yeah, no, I think it's true. I think it still feeds into that thing of there's just so much of everything that you're kind of like the reality and the fiction merge together and you're just left ciphering through it sort of thing. So, because I bots are annoying and they definitely take up space and make things difficult, but yeah, it's becoming one of those things. You're just learning to live with it, aren't you? Just accepting that half the followers that come in randomly are probably not people you know, and they're probably just a random account that saw some reason to follow you or whatever. But yeah,
it's
I think even that I can
live with it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just to wade through every now and again. But I still think that's the sort of thing where it's like that's a platform that's maybe not in the most healthy state. But it's the same as a business. People leave those sorts of issues because it's too expensive to solve it in any meaningful way. It'll take too much effort and then inevitably annoy somebody along the process.
And one thing I always like to jump back to is, can you remember Zuckerberg's deposition in front of the House?
Where he looked like he'd just been over.
Half of the people that were asking the questions, if not more than half of them, didn't even know what these things were, how to use them, how to access the internet, what the internet was. You know,
I think that speaks more to the American political system.
One final question for you, Urban. Do you think it's actually a little bit of... what's the word I'm looking for here? The leaders just don't know. The people that are running the countries and, our MPs and our governments, they simply don't understand. They're just oblivious. That's the word I'm looking for, Sean. Thank you.
Okay.
They're just oblivious to the fact that these things happen and this stuff goes on, and that's why it happens.
Yeah, I think that's always been somewhat true. The idea that people that
sweep
go
under
down,
the rug. Ignore it, and it'll go away.
Yeah, or just look, if we put loads of legislation through and this ends up not being an industry that goes anywhere or a tool or technology that has anything to do with a world 15 years from now, like what was the point?
Yeah.
So I mean, that's how it's always been. Railways were unsafe until so many people started getting killed that they literally couldn't do anything about it. But the problem is the rate at which things change and grow and develop, that it's like an upside down pyramid. you think about the early people, early civilians and civilizations, they're just constantly, you know, they've got one problem, they can solve it, they've got six guys doing this, blah, blah, blah. Now it's millions and billions, you just cannot keep up. So I think it's always going to be reactionary, and it's always going to take something like a huge event like the riots and the events that led up to it to do it. But yeah. it's just that whole you gotta keep yourself informed and make sure that you're aware of it, even if you're not, you know, because you can just ignore it and you can get on, but it does make you trust things less. It does make you more aware of, like, yeah, actually this system is not going to be the best place to get my news or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's always going to be the way. There's always going to be really bad things, and it's going to take those to get legislation in place, and then test of time whether or not that was done right.
So in conclusion then, keep using the internet because it is quite a good tool, but don't necessarily believe everything you read on it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think that's probably, and it's not going to get any better, so just deal with it.
Yeah, it's that whole, you know, just see everything through a lens of being slightly suspect, but also willing to learn something new, you know.
Yeah,
could amuse you.
If you don't want to see something, if you wouldn't want to see something on social media, don't post something that somebody else wouldn't want to see on social media, right?
Yeah.
I still think back as well, like, bring back the acknowledging your mistake and apologizing publicly. That has been pushed to one side quite a lot recently.
Well,
you have to be a politician,
a
someone
now.
To actually be held accountable.
It still happens, yeah. Doesn't it? You think Boris Johnson came out in the House, he profusely apologized for the parties that he didn't. Them's the breaks, you know.
Yeah.
But I think it's just been normalized, you know. I apologize, everything will be all right now. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think trust is something that is earned, and that isn't earned by just standing up and going, sorry. Once that trust has been broken,
agree.
In my mind, that trust has been broken.
Yeah, I completely do see that point of view.
Difficult, because Boris isn't going to come around to my house and start rebuilding, you know, start earning my personal trust. But
no.
it's trust in him as a public servant, and I think that goes for the rest of them as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. There is no trust in politics. Hopefully, no.
Right.
We can build it up again. But
I think that would be a good place to end, boys, because we've gone way over how long we said we were going to. But Urban, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It has been wonderful.
Hope you've had fun. Sean, I always ask this. Anything else from you?
No. Just thanks for joining Urban. That was good fun.
We'll have you back on. I'm not sure that we're going to be recording next week.
Why wouldn't we?
I can't remember. There's a reason. We'll let you know.
Next week is fine.
September. Oh, yeah, September. We're going on holiday. Yeah, we're going to Portugal. Sorry.
I wish that was next week. It's not. It's not.
Right. Thank you, everybody. We will see you next time.
Much love, guys.
Good night. Where's my mouse? There it is.